Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with the Meeks and Korg to my Lord of Hammers, Justin or Andy. Justin, how you doing?
I'm good. What am I? Am I the hammer?
I think you're Korg.
Oh, okay.
You should take that. Randy's Meeks, but he doesn't get that reference because Randy didn't see Thor Ragnarok. Randy, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, and yeah, I'm completely clueless about your reference, but I appreciate your geekiness anyway, even if I don't understand the reference.
Just remember, Korg the Rock person is just the best, and he's going to steal the show of Thor Ragnarok when you get around to see it. You do want to see it, correct?
I do want to see it, yes. I am looking forward to seeing it. I was just working over the weekend, and I did not have a chance to get away.
Sure, that's not a problem, you know, as long as you didn't go see other movies, you know, that's not...
No, I did finally finish watching House of Cards, but that was before the weekend. That was right after we recorded our last podcast. I'm like, shit, I better sit and watch this so I figure out what's going on. Yeah. So, we don't need to talk about that anymore, but just know that I am up to date, and I wish I had been last week. I would have come to the discussion a little bit more well-armed.
I mean, it is worth noting that the story needs a little bit of an update in that Netflix has cut ties with Mr. Kevin Spacey. He is donezo.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, right now that Randy's seen the end of House of Cards, we can kind of talk about it, you know. Claire's the president, so it would be easy for something to happen to Frank. And I've been on the Claire Underwood train for a long time, and happy to see her take over that mantle.
Yep.
But, Thor, Justin and I saw it, and I think we have pretty similar reactions, but I'll let Justin kick it off. So, Justin, what were your thoughts on Thor Ragnarok?
I thought it was extremely entertaining. Loved every second of it from start to finish. It's quite a romp. I think the whole theater was just cracking up the entire time, and I think Marvel knows how to make a movie right, and it was a blast. My only, if I could give it any feedback whatsoever, it would be just sort of deep diving a little bit into Hela and Odin's past. She sort of details a bit of a grim story of the two of them just sort of wreaking havoc on the universe. And I think it would have been really cool to have sort of a Lord of the Rings intro movie. In that vein where we see the two of them riding together, just sort of conquering worlds. And I think that would have been pretty badass. But other than that, loved every second of it. And it ranks pretty high on my list of Marvel movies.
Yeah, I would definitely second what you said. My problem with Hela was I didn't really give her probably the just due that she deserved just because I was having so much fun on Sakaar with Thor and Hulk and Valkyrie and everybody to where, and Korg and Meek, to where when we would leave there and go to Asgard where Hela was doing what Hela does, I was always kind of like, aww. But, you know, I understand we got to tell a whole story and, you know, we need to progress the plot over there. But when I saw it again, I was more appreciative of, you know, Cate Blanchett as Hela. You know, she's got two Academy Awards and she's incredible. She's one of the greatest actresses working right now. Mm-hmm. And so for Marvel to score her in one of their films is a pretty big coup. And I loved it. You know, one of the things that kind of caught me off guard when I saw it again was the score. It's like it's the first real Marvel movie with like a unique score. You know, all the other Marvel movies kind of sound alike to where the person who did this one, I think he's like like a member of Devo or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was this really cool, like, 80s vibed, like, synth-heavy, like, score, and it really worked. And then, of course, they played the Immigrant Song in the movie twice, and that was always a crowd-pleaser. But we will keep it relatively spoiler-free since Randy hasn't seen it, but it is definitely worth the check. I would say it's probably in my top three Marvel movies. It's hysterical, but it still manages to put some pretty heavy themes out there and some couple gut punches, but I would give it a definite A, and outside of Iron Man and maybe the first Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier, those might be my top three, with Thor being like a close fourth.
That's pretty respectable. It's in my top three, and I think that order could change at any given time, because a couple of them are all sort of different. Like, Thor is sort of the buddy cop, whereas Winter Soldier is sort of the spy movie, and then Guardians is just sort of that off-the-rail surprise hit that just caught me off guard.
Yeah.
But, fuck, man, everyone just brought their A-game. It was so good and so funny. I wasn't expecting it to be as funny as it was, and I am really looking forward to another viewing. And it's crazy to me to think about, you know, you mentioned Cate Blanchett, Academy Award-winning actress. You know, she is perfect in this movie, and it cracks me up that so many people just want to get away from the comic book movies. You know, like Natalie Portman was like, oh, fuck Thor, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. Idris Elba, he's same thing. He's like over it. He just doesn't want to do it anymore. And both of those characters are barely even in the movie, so I don't quite get it. And it's just, it's crazy to me. And I think that
might have something to do with it, to where they're kind of like muted characters, to where Cate Blanchett got to put on this crazy outfit and like kick ass and do cool shit, to where maybe that's more enticing than Natalie Portman just like being like surprised that Thor's Thor.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean, I could be wrong. Or maybe they're just snooty fucks.
Maybe. And I hate how Hollywood, like when it comes time for the Academy Awards, they're going to make fun of comic book movies. And it's like, I don't get it. It's literally what's putting butts in the seats. No one wants to see these artsy movies anymore. It's they want to have fun and they want to escape when they go to the movies. They don't want to see some depressing art movie with weird dynamic angles that are supposed to make the movie better. It's
right.
Not about that anymore. We've moved on.
The problem with the Academy Awards is that the largest portion of the Academy is made up of actors, and Randy can attest to this as well, that they're very, I want to suck each other's, in a non-sexual way, they want to kiss each other's asses, and they think that like, oh, look at this brave choice that McConaughey made, he's like this guy with AIDS and this and that, like, that they want to seem cool and reward things that, sure, it was a great movie, but they're kind of like the guy who likes the band until the band becomes big, and
right.
Then they're like, "Oh, I hate that band." They want to be
sellouts.
They want to be in this cool niche. I found this cool little movie, and it's rad, and it's like way better than this Thor movie that everyone's watching. You guys are posers. The real cinema's getting made over here,
right?
And I think that's a big problem with the Academy right now.
It's too bad. Well, when Korg wins Best Actor, he can be like, "Hey, man, I'm Korg."
Get out of here, Ghost.
Piss off, Ghost.
Piss off, Ghost.
Oh, it's so great.
It is the best. And Goldblum, Jeff Goldblum, goes full Goldblum in this movie, and he's just a delight. From like he, no one has ever played bigger than how he's playing the Grandmaster, and it's just amazing.
It's almost like he's doing an impression of himself, or at least who we think Jeff Goldblum is. If you ever seen any of his interviews, he's just like that Grandmaster character sometimes. It's nuts.
It's like Ian Malcolm got really high on peyote and like wandered into like this like sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah. Fantastic. I can't say enough good about it. Loved every second of it. My mom went and saw it, and she knows nothing about superheroes, and she loved the shit out of this movie. She said it was so funny.
And I know we haven't really talked about Chris Hemsworth, just because we were used to it. Every time we're surprised how funny he is. And he's hysterical, and you think it's out of place, but then you're like, you know, I guess if I were a god and like everything was just so commonplace, you know, I might be a wisecracking son of a bitch too. And he from like minute one, like he's the opening of the film, he's like, I know what you're thinking. Oh no, Thor's stuck in a cage.
Yeah.
How'd he get here? And from that moment on, it's just amazing what a joy it is to watch him be Thor.
Mm-hmm. And then For every funny joke, you know, he will spout out some sort of words of wisdom at some point. And it's interesting because it grounds it again, which is so bizarre to say in a world that is, you know, with all these monsters and gladiators and gods and monsters. And then he just says something that totally makes sense. And you're like, God damn it, that's why you're the God of Thunder.
Yeah, and of course, Loki, Tom Hiddleston, steals the show, but I guess so does Korg, and so does the Hulk, and so
yeah,
does the...
Yeah, everyone just is amazing. Valkyrie, too, fucking badass. She could have her own movie, for all I care. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I was... great about her is how flawed she is. Like, you know, in today's society, it's kind of taboo to, you know, I know... with the social justice warriors of today trying to elevate females by making her character so flawed and so at some points unlikable, it made her a more real feeling character and it made her a very engrossing character who I want to see more of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Words and all. But yeah, loved it. Randy, I know, is sitting there like, come on, stop talking about this movie I haven't seen. Let's talk about something more fun. Right, Randy? Is that what you're thinking?
I completely tuned you guys out. What? I'm teasing.
Perfect.
Yeah, let's move along.
All right, Randy. So, Disney, they're making some moves. They're movers and shakers, and they're in talks with 20th Century Fox about buying their backlog of films and television and purchasing their film franchises. Now, they're not going to be purchasing Fox as a whole, so they're not going to own, like, you know, Fox News or the actual studio itself. They're only buying their properties, which would be interesting because they would then own all the Star Wars movies because 20th Century Fox still owns distribution rights to Episode 4. What, is this a... just a shrewd move by them trying to, like, get more programming for their streaming service? Or is this just Disney taking over the world?
Snooting?
I definitely think that while they will benefit with their streaming service, I think it's got to be kind of a thorn in Disney's side, knowing that although they own Star Wars and the franchise possibilities and all the licensing rights, that kind of thing, they still couldn't release the original version if they wanted to, and that seems to be something that a lot of fans are clamoring for. So it almost feels like kind of putting the period at the end of that particular sentence to be able to go in and purchase the backlog of Fox, if nothing else, so that they can... in an unencumbered way, put A New Hope back out in the way that fans originally enjoyed it back in 77. Or maybe
same thing with Marvel, too. I mean, they got Spider-Man back. The only thing they're missing is the Fox ones.
Yeah. And the very first announcement that I saw showing that basically showed, like, this epic face-off with the Avengers versus X-Men kind of thing. And... I would love to see the cinematic universes collide. I think that would be fantastic. But I think the streaming thing is just icing on the cake. I know Dick about the business side of things and about what's going to be making the money and where their revenue stream is really coming from. So this is just me as a fanboy going, well, how do I rank what's important in this, and what do I think is going on? My opinion means shit. We've established that I know nothing.
You know nothing, Jon Snow. What about you, Justin? Same kind of question. Is this maybe not so much, maybe it's two-pronged, maybe it's helping their service, but also hurting Netflix, because if they own these properties and assume that they would take all the 20th Century Fox properties that they own off of the streaming platform, and, you know, Netflix is the gold standard for streaming. And so if they can take all of the Disney movies, all the Marvel movies, Star Wars movies, and now all the 20th Century Fox movies, would that be a big enough blow, A, to Netflix, and a big enough boom for the Disney service to get you more excited to stream through them?
I don't think it necessarily would be a blow to Netflix because they are so on board with original programming, and they won't have to pay license fees for all these movies. It costs them money to have those movies on their streaming service, so I think in their own secret way, it's like a good riddance. And I only say that because King of the Hill was Fox, and they didn't want to pay the licensing fees for it. And I was livid when it left Netflix. So much so that I called them almost every day to complain. And I would do, like, a live chat on my computer saying, where the hell's my King of the Hill? And I never got it back, and I'm sad. But as far as Disney goes, they are going to want to start their streaming service off with a bang, and the more the merrier. Although me personally, we were talking about this off the show, I'm actually just excited at the idea of maybe getting some old Mickey, Donald, and Goofy cartoons. I would just have that shit on all day long. It would be my white noise, and I would love every second of it.
The Pitch Bang Boom, what is it? What's the one? The Dawn of the cartoon you like? The Bears?
Oh, yeah. The Poke the Bear, Put It in the Bag, Boom, Boom.
That's what it is.
Humphrey the Bear.
Oh, my God, you're taking me back.
It's so funny. Oh, my God.
Well, what would you say, Justin, so that, you know, Kevin Feige was very vocal, you know, when Logan came out and was an R-rated movie, that Disney was not interested in making R-rated comic book movies. And with Logan and Deadpool being R-rated and potentially joining the Disney universe, do you think that's a stance he'll have to change, or do you see them trying to in some way sanitize those properties? I guess with Logan it's over, so it doesn't really matter, but more focused towards Deadpool.
I think that Disney has their own way of having some other name on those properties, where they could, yeah, they might own it, but their name's not on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they might go that route. I mean, that's one of those,
like, an off-brand.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. And clearly, they have a proven track record for success. So I think it would be foolish to change that. Audiences clearly want it, so it would be weird to take that away. Especially given the weird trailers that we've been watching. What the hell was that movie that we were watching with in, like, the Insane Asylum? New Mutants?
New Mutants?
Yeah. Holy shit, man. That looks weird. But, I mean, this is all big picture, greater scope type of conversations, whereas these movies are already well on their way of coming out in the near future.
Yeah, and there are some precedents for it that, you know, Disney used to release their live-action movies under Touchstone Pictures.
Yeah, correct. You know? Correct.
And so now, I mean, now obviously they release everything under the Disney umbrella, but, you know, there's no reason they couldn't bring back Touchstone or some other subsidiary to do it. Or just release it through Miramax. They got good PR going on right now.
Have you even seen Wild Hogs?
twice last week.
That's a Touchstone movie.
With Travolta,
mm-hmm.
and Tim Allen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very good.
So is Con Air, and Dick Tracy. I fucking love Dick Tracy.
Yeah. Roger Rabbit as well.
Yeah.
Excellent score on those last two movies.
Oh, hey, man, Dick Tracy is fucking awesome.
Danny Elfman at his peak.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say he's still at his peak.
I like me some Elfman.
I got no beef on Mr. Elfman.
While we're talking about that, I'm just going to insert this in here real quick. I don't think we mentioned it last week. In fact, I don't know if it had dropped. The news had dropped yet, but I had heard a little bit of the Justice League score, and I was super stoked to hear that they had incorporated John Williams' original Superman theme for the Henry Cavill Superman. Ooh. And word dropped last week that Tim Burton was going to be throwing in some of the 1989 Batman theme for the Affleck Batman. That's going to be his, like, ongoing theme in Justice League. So they're going with the retro themes. And for me, I mean, although we're going with drastically different versions of the characters right now, I love the scores are what make those movies for me, and I absolutely love the idea that they're going back to that particular well. So maybe it's just kind of like some sort of grasp for nostalgia. Maybe it's because Elfman's actually doing the music for it, and it's like, why do I have to come up with another Batman theme when I've done this perfectly good one, you know, 30 years ago? So
paid twice.
Shit. I'm actually pretty stoked on it. So I think that is a wonderful move on the part of Warner Brothers and DC. So if you guys hadn't heard that, cool. And if I've already mentioned that before, I'm so excited it's worth talking about twice.
Honestly, I think that the Superman theme is one of the coolest scores like ever. That is literally one of my favorites.
It just builds and builds and builds until you can't take it anymore.
I know. And then it's like, yes, Superman's here to save the day. Oh, my God.
That's one of the reasons I love Superman Returns, because the opening credit sequence was straight out of the
original. Remind me. Can't take it. I can't take it.
I love it. I love it.
That is my brown noise. I can't do it. I get so sick.
I heard about Elfman's score returning. I hadn't heard that they were going to reuse John Williams' Superman score, which is awesome news, because especially because Zack Snyder was so adamant that new Superman, new score, which is, I mean, arguably Superman, Man of Steel has a pretty great score too, but I mean, obviously nothing is classic John Williams.
Yeah, to me, the themes aren't real strong. And even if you look at like the Nolan's Batman movies, there's a lot of percussion, and it's got a very interesting sound that's all its own. It's very definitely that version of Batman. But to me, it lacked like any real strong theme that was at least as memorable as the stuff we grew up with. So I love the idea of seeing it come back like this.
You mean you don't like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it does like the, and then it goes. You're like, okay, Batman.
Set the mood, but yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to hear a kid humming that while playing with his Batman action figures.
No, but you will hear that. Like the classic '60s Batman theme is just the greatest. I love it.
Oh shit! Yeah.
No, Batman.
Batman! Yeah, dude, I press my little button every day on my Blu-ray set.
Oh, no, your battery's going to die. Can you replace that thing?
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't care. I just press it. Even when there's no sound, I'll still press it.
How sad are you going to be when it stops making noises?
I will die.
Or you'll just make the noise yourself?
Yeah. And then I always, at the end, it just goes after that, no, Batman. I always say, the Batman. I had enough to piss everybody off. Because that's just how I do.
That's just what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that wasn't the only Disney story in the news this week. Disney was in a...
We're talking about Touchstone, Dave.
Oh. Well, this one is Disney, not Touchstone. The House of Mouse was not happy with the LA Times story they printed about Disney maybe not paying their fair share in as far as taxes and stuff go for their park in Anaheim. So Disney responded like any grown man and a corporation would do by blackballing LA Times from any Disney movie screenings or events that would be associated with Disney.
That's right. And,
while I'm not surprised that practices like this happened, I was surprised that they openly admitted it. Like it wasn't like a secret. Like they told them, like, you guys can't come because you guys did this story. Did they not think the LA Times, a news outlet, was not going to report on something like that? They quickly rescinded it. You know, maybe not quickly, but within less than a day, they had rescinded their blackballing, so to speak, and so it appears that they are now interested in playing nice. But Justin, this is makes Disney look pretty petty, right?
Yeah, I think it's funny, but it would have been even more amusing if, as they like Star Wars was coming out, just no one got the invitation to come see it, and then they just kept getting like the runaround, and they just wouldn't respond. I think that would have been funnier. Instead of being openly hostile, just be like, oh, got lost in the mail. Sorry, we thought you'd be here.
Did you send it to @disney.com? Oh, we changed everything over. It's this new system. It's so confusing.
Oh, I think it's funny. Reporters are an interesting bunch. Especially film critics. I wouldn't say... I don't know. It's weird. Like, I just feel like... film critics are, I think it's a privilege to see these movies ahead of time in front of everyone else. and it is a, it's very much an opinion piece. So maybe Disney should just say, you know what, we're not really interested in your opinion anyway, so fuck off. I think that's perfectly valid. I would say, you know what, eat a dick.
Well, Randy, you have a unique experience of being on both sides of this Disney coin. You have both been an employee of Disney, and you've also enjoyed the perks of screening films for Disney. Does this strike you as petty or just par for the course from the vindictive House of Mouse?
I would say it's par for the course, but the most surprising thing, like you said, is the fact that they were so flagrantly admitted it. Like, yeah, you know, you did this. Fuck you. You know, it's like, hey, if this is a pissing contest, I'm going to guarantee my dick is bigger than yours. And the LA Times called them on that bluff. And here we are.
Honesty is the best policy, Randy.
Yeah.
Surprised Disney just didn't just buy LA Times and, like, just fire them all.
Yeah, just crush them from within. I mean, yeah, if it were a bad superhero movie, that would be totally the plot. Yeah, I read that article, the one that supposedly Disney got so upset about, and it does point out the fact that Disney's kind of taking advantage of the city of Anaheim, especially with like the parking structure and all the money that it's generating, and the fact that Disney only pays like a $1 a year lease for that 10,000 plus parking monstrosity. I mean, it's got all sorts of things, and it makes some interesting points, but it's like, they're not wrong, you know? It's just, it's shining a light under a particular rock that Disney doesn't want people to know exists. And they can't, obviously it's been demonstrated, they can't do that. They can't, they can't dictate what the media can and cannot bring to light. If Disney was really that concerned about their image, they would either clean it up or go through a whole lot more trouble to keep that shit under wraps.
Yeah, it wasn't like a hit piece or anything like that. Like, it wasn't like
yeah.
They were going out. They were reporting on facts, and it wasn't even the film critics, you know? It was, you know, it was a columnist for the LA Times.
Yeah.
It's not like it was, like, someone who reviews their films. So, I mean, it was just them trying to punish the LA Times for being reporters.
I think it's funny. I don't know.
It's a total...
I think it's hysterical that, like, I'm sure they had countless meetings, and, like, these motherfuckers... Yeah. Like, I get to see Bob Iger just, like, furiously yelling at people, like, Who talked?
Yeah, I picture, like, in Christmas Vacation when his boss is like, get me somebody! And get me somebody while I'm waiting. Like, he's so mad.
Yeah. Give me the Ed 209.
Love it. I think it's funny.
I think it's funny now that it's, like, resolved. My whole thing is, like, I have no doubt that there are outlets that do get blackballed for, you know, X, Y, or Z. Because, you know, it's hard reviewing films when, like, these people are so nice to you. They're like, oh, yeah, no, we'll save you a seat. You know, come out, watch this movie early. Half the time they give you popcorn and soda and sometimes even some other stuff. And, you know, then when you leave, they're like, oh, thanks for coming. I hope you had a great time. And you're like, fuck, I got to go trash this movie. And you guys have all been so nice to me.
I know. I had that experience when I went and watched The Host. They were very nice, but I hated the movie.
Yeah. The nicest that anyone's ever been to me was for the screening of Transformers Age of Extinction, which is one of my least favorite movies ever. And it was one of the nicest PR guys, Brandon, who's no longer with Paramount anymore. And they just couldn't have been nicer people. And they went out of their way to make sure everyone had a great time. But in the end, it was, you know, they get it. I mean, they didn't make the movie. they know if a movie's not good. So, but it's hard.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies that probably won't be good, Justice League.
You're terrible. For $300 million, it better be good.
Are you pumped for this movie, Justin?
I'm excited. I like superhero movies. And it's got Batman, it's got a little bit of the Superman, and now it's got themes. It's got one of my favorite themes of all time, like hints of it. I can't wait to listen for it. Plus, the Flash looks amazing, and
he
is super funny in all the trailers, and I'm excited.
Are you as pumped as Justin, Randy?
I'll admit I'm moderately excited. I wouldn't say I'm quite as pumped as Justin is, but I don't think I get that excited about anything outside of Star Wars. So that's just me, though.
I mean, I was counting the days till Thor came out. Like, I wanted to see this movie, and like, I'm just not reaching that hype level for Justice League. Like, I don't know if it's that I've been burned with the DCEU, or that like I don't understand what's happening in these trailers. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of that.
It's happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But I think with the success of Wonder Woman and how amazing she was in that, plus how good she was in Batman v Superman, Flash looking amazing and sounding amazing and being funny, Batman excited to be Batman again, and seeing how Superman is going to come back, I think that's enough to warrant excitement.
No, and you're right. I mean, everything you said makes sense, and I know that. But just for some reason, like maybe is it like the week before I'll get pumped or something. But I'm just not like I'm even for Batman v Superman. I was pumped. I was excited. I was like, oh yeah. But I love Ezra Miller. I think the Flash will be the standout, and that's what early screenings have been saying. But yeah, I'm just not. I don't know why. Maybe there's something wrong with me. But well, we brought this up for Justin brought up the first part that it cost $300 million to make this movie, which I guess is what happens was when you bring in a new director and you shoot a bunch of stuff that you didn't plan on shooting. But also that the CEO of Warner Brothers actually dictated that this movie be under 2 hours, that he was blaming the poor reception of Batman v Superman to the bloated runtime, as he called it. And you know, there is some business savviness to having a shorter movie. You know, if your movie's 2 hours versus 2.5 hours, you can get one or maybe even two extra screenings a day, especially for those first 2 weeks when you know, you're going to make the lion's share of your box office. So, Randy, does runtime matter to you? I mean, 2 hours, I mean, it seems a little short, but I mean, you could pack a lot in a 2 hour. So are you concerned for a 2 hour runtime and that it was something that was dictated by a money guy and not a creative?
You know, the first thing you think when you hear that a running time has been limited, it's that, okay, well, it's to save money. But we already know that this film, the production of this film, has hemorrhaged a ridiculous amount of money, and it keeps continuing to do so, what with all the reshoots and everything. So I don't think it's so much a money issue. It's, look, if you have a movie that is 2 hours and 15 minutes long, 2 hours, 20 minutes long, people are going to look at that runtime and go, oh my God, do I really want to sit through that? Do I really want to sit through another Batman vs. Superman? And they end up choosing something else for date night or whatever. And I'm just talking about your average person, not necessarily your fanboy like us who's going to go see these type of movies regardless. I think they're doing it just from a general audience standpoint that people they just don't want to be... They just don't want to be bogged down by such a long trot of a movie. That's what I think.
I like the long trot of a movie. Well, what do you think, Justin? Do you think that do you like that it was a business person who made the decision and it wasn't so much the creative team that went forward and said, hey, here's a story we have, you know, this and that. And then he asked, like, hey, keep it under 2 hours. Like, oh, we can do this, this, and this. It was kind of a, this is my company. This movie has to be under 2 hours. Make it happen. Does it upset you that a money guy, a penny pusher, made the decision, not a creative?
No, I think sometimes that's what it takes. I mean, that's what you have editors for, right? People to make those choices for you. Like, this is good, but doing this would be better. I think this is just one of those cases.
Yeah. And does the runtime matter to you? Are you one of those people who lives and breathes by runtime, or are you like, hey, the movie's as long as it needs to be?
It is as long as it needs to be kind of guy. Always have been. Sometimes I get sad when it's over, but I think that's a good thing. I like wanting the movie to keep going. You know, I love Lord of the Rings almost as much as Star Wars, and even I get a little, like, worn out when I watch the extended edition of Return of the King. I'm like, shit, I need a nap.
After.
Yeah. So sometimes those cuts are important. But, I mean, for the sake of the movie theater, If I'm home, then I can watch. It can be as long as it needs to be. But when I'm in the theater, man, I gotta pee. I gotta fucking. I want to go. I got shit to do that day. I don't know. It's just all kinds of shit going on. So I'm okay with a condensed version of what the artist wants me to see.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. My only caveat would be they haven't dictated if it was from the beginning he told them it had to be 2 hours or if this was something after they had shot everything. So I think those are two different things to where if as the director they tell you to make a two-hour movie, you know, you can do stuff and make sure you constrain yourself. But if you've made a two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour movie and they come to you and they're like, oh, by the way, we want this to be 2 hours, you know, when you know that you shot a two-and-a-half-hour movie, I think that's maybe when it gets a little more dicey. So yeah. I guess, but we may never know, you know, but we'll have to see. But the only time I care about running time really is if it's a comedy and it's too much over 100 minutes.
Right.
Like when Apatow's big on two-hour, 15-minute comedies, and you know they're not all 40-year-old virgins. Even 40-year-old virgins probably 15 minutes too long.
Yeah,
but it's funny.
It's long, man. That is true. It is a long movie. So sad. This is 40. All of his movies are long.
Yeah, Knocked Up. They're all over 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Funny People. Funny People's like I think 8.5 hours, and not funny. It does have people in it though, so. Your buddy Eric Bana is in it.
Oh, yeah.
He plays Leslie Mann's husband.
That's true.
Who is Judd Apatow's wife, who I will steal from him one day.
Thank you for all that information.
That you did not ask nor want. But speaking of information overload, this weekend was BlizzCon, Blizzard Entertainment's yearly love letter to gamers. I think... Justin plays more of the games, I think, than us. I really only play World of Warcraft, and Randy doesn't know yet, but he'll soon be playing more World of Warcraft. Was there, aside from Battle for Azeroth, the new World of Warcraft expansion, what really got your goat going, Justin?
I'm a big fan of the Arena World Championships. I think that is just some straight-up edge-of-your-seat sort of action. And I just get so excited. I love watching everything from all the way up through the finals, from the early matches all the way through the finals. It's so exciting to see these teams go at it. And North America couldn't pull it off this time, but it was a good effort. I was definitely pumped. I was sad that there was no Diablo news. That was kind of missing. I would have loved to hear about Diablo 4 coming out or a new expansion for Diablo 3. Any one of those would have been a pretty good takeaway. But, you know, it's a good show.
I think Diablo's coming to mobile. I think that Blizzard has been posting a lot of jobs for classic retro Diablo stuff. Uh-huh. For, you know, like designers and stuff like that. And... unless they plan on re-releasing Diablo, which is possible. They did the HD thing for StarCraft. I bet they make like a Diablo mobile game.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't even play that. Yeah. I don't do mobile. My phone tweets and Insta faces, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I'd say you're missing out then.
Yeah.
You got the pew-pew on the small screen. It's fun.
Yeah.
Randy, BlizzCon. What was something that tickled your fancy?
I think the announcement of the Warcraft Classic servers really piqued my interest the most. Now I don't know because I wasn't watching the live stream or anything. I saw a couple articles about it, but it looks like we're just going to be able to go back and replay the vanilla version before any expansions came out for World of Warcraft. And I don't know if it's going to be progressing along to Burning Crusade or Lich King or any of the other expansions as time goes on. I'd like to see that because I had a lot of good times playing each one of those expansions, but there's something just kind of magical about being able to go back to the way it was. God, how many years ago has it been now? Like 12 years since the original came out? Like going all the way back and playing the vanilla version. I have a feeling I might get sick of it after a while, but I'm really excited to go play that. I am more excited about that than I am the new expansion.
Whoa. But luckily, the new expansion, I'm sure, will come up before. At the Warcraft What's Next panel, almost all of the questions were about Classic WoW, and all of their answers were they didn't have any answers.
Yeah.
they were basically making an announcement because they knew that people want it, and they're always asking for it, so they could kind of get ahead of it for one BlizzCon finally and be like, okay, we're working on it. Shut up. Leave us alone. But, yeah, it's a fun curiosity. If assuming it's something that's just put on a regular Warcraft or regular Warcraft subscription, and that, you know, we can just make a tune just to try it out, I'd try it out, play it, you know, maybe have some fun for a while.
I think people are crazy, and it is a golden era that is people are just blinded by this member berries. It was awful. There were some fun events. I mean, I still have the group photo of all of us walking to Scarlet Monastery.
Walking.
And we look like total assholes in our gear, and it's hilarious. But I never want to do that again. And part of the magic of that game is it's unable to be recreated, in that I remember the first time I went to like Darnassus, and I saw these crazy trees, and the first time I went to Undercity, and I got so frustrated because I couldn't find a fucking thing with all the crazy elevators and weird town and the little huts in Orgrimmar. Like, I literally felt like I was playing, I was in like Middle Earth or something. You know, I love Lord of the Rings, and to play a game like this, it felt like I was just in it. And every fucking character had some weird spelling of Legolas, and it was just really fun and cool. And it's impossible to recreate that. Even with the new expansions, when I see the worlds, the new worlds and maps and continents, I'm always like, this is kind of cool, but it's never that crazy magical feeling that I had when I first played the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember the first time I played in vanilla, and I made my stupid ugly paladin, and you and Scott yeah. met me in the Elwynn Forest, and you're like, oh, let's go over to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, where's that? And he's like, oh, it's the next map over. I'm like, I thought the Elwynn Forest was like the entirety of the game. I'm like, there's yeah. more?
What? Yeah.
And I was wearing my sexy gold pants and my big old hammer.
Oh, man. That shit was just so cool. And then, like, when people would kite, like, those crazy lava dudes from, like,
Burning Steps?
Yeah, Burning Steps all the way over. And when Randy and I went walking through that broken gate into Burning Steps, we're like, oh, what's this cool place?
Yeah, we're like, ooh, what's this? This looks like the Gates of Mordor.
Yeah.
Dead.
And that's just it. That exploration, that feeling of the unknown, and just that uncertainty of what's behind this door, I feel like I'll never get that ever again.
Yeah, and there's so many quality of life changes that they've done in the live version of the game that I think anyone playing now that hasn't been playing since the beginning will have zero fun in vanilla. Mm-hmm. There's just too many quality of life changes, be it, you know, spells lasting, the talent trees, you know, changes to gear, you know, stats. I love playing tanks, and the day I didn't have to be hit capped or defense capped for a tank was like, oh great, now I can stack stamina or something else.
Right.
But it's just so, you know, bag space is limited. You know, you're only gonna, I think Rune Weave was like the top bag, and I think that's only 16 slots. So I mean, your bag slots are already shit, 14 slots. Thank you, Mr. Taylor. You know, so you got your bag space is limited. Things don't stack as high as they used to, as they do now. A lot of things like regents only stack in like fives. You know, soul shards don't stack at all.
Yeah, so, that was awful. Arrows and bullets and stupid food that you had to feed your pet, and that was exhausting. So I don't miss that at all.
Having to go to the dungeon.
Yeah, walking there or flight, you know, the nearest flight plan, which still might be a billion miles away, and you still got to ride all the way over there. Yeah. It's rough, man. Getting 40 people together to kill a stupid dragon, that's hard to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just, like I said, I would definitely try it just to see, you know, what the experience is, to see, you know, how vanilla-like it is. You know, they don't have the original servers they used to have Vanilla WoW on. So they're kind of recreating everything. But I don't know. We'll see. But I'm with you. That was kind of cool. But I'm surprised to hear you say, Randy, that excited you more than the Battle for Azeroth, the next expansion for World of Warcraft. Was it just because you don't care for your Horde brethren?
I don't know. I'm just granted it's been months since I've played, so I didn't get to play any of the endgame Legion stuff. And
well, it's not out yet.
Oh, okay. Well, beyond when Legion was first released, I didn't do much more beyond just like Raid Finder stuff for that. And I don't know. I'm just, well, number one, I haven't had time. I just haven't had the time to mess with it. And I don't know. And I think you guys nailed it with what Justin was saying, you know, like the very first time you did something or those memories that we made, you know, as friends playing together for those first few months or whatever, that's kind of magical in this weird ethereal way, because we weren't doing it there together in person, but we are all together online, and it was like this bizarre new experience that we absolutely all adored, and you can't recapture that lightning in a bottle. You know, it's like when you're dating somebody for, you know, the honeymoon period, the first couple months or whatever, everything is new and exciting and wonderful, and you look forward to playing, and you sit there while you're at work, and you're you know, fantasizing about, you know, the dungeon you're going to be running that night, or the gear that you want to make or find or whatever. It's like you're not going to ever be able to recapture that. It's like there's varying degrees. You could still do that to this day. You could still be super excited about it, but for me, there's like a law of diminishing returns. Like every time I go through this, it excites me less.
And it definitely is some truth to that. I would say the Legion was the first time, you know, because there was diminishing returns. Legion was the first time it kind of went back up to make me more excited. Once they brought our buddy Illidan back into the fold, and now that you're kind of fighting alongside Illidan, I still kind of get shivers, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm fighting with Illidan. Or like when he gives me a quest or says, good job, like I feel like my dad was like, good job, Dave. But it's like Illidan's like, you did it, Zack Snyder. Way to go. So, Illidan.
Yeah.
He's probably going to die, and I'll be sad.
Oh.
Yeah. It happens. But yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, they announced more Hearthstone. That game's never going to go away. More heroes for Heroes of the Storm. A new playable character for Overwatch. Everyone was pretty excited about that. New map, Blizzardland. Everyone was kind of like, oh, that's kind of fun. So yeah, it looked like it was a lot of fun. We have no idea when any of these expansions are coming out. We don't know when Battle for Azeroth's coming out. We don't know when WoW Classic is coming out. They didn't really even give any dates. I think next week is when the final raid for Legion opens up. I think that's when the Burning Throne or whatever. So they've been some cool data mines on that. So if you want to be spoiled, you can check out some of that stuff on like MMO Champion and stuff like that. But go WoW. It's fun. But Justin, you were telling me about a fun series from Amazon. Amazon's working on something?
Yeah, so there's talks with Warner Brothers to start a Lord of the Rings series on Amazon. Seems kind of weird to think about. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm perfectly fine with the movies from Peter Jackson. But I think with the success of shows like fucking Game of Thrones and like Vikings that people are led to believe that there is a market for this fantasy world and we want to see more of it. I don't know how well Lord of the Rings will work as a TV show. They were able to cram all of it into about 12 hours. So it seems kind of weird to stretch it out any longer than it needs to be. But I mean, if it gets newer and younger kids into Lord of the Rings, then I guess more power to them. But I don't necessarily know if it's something that needs to be made.
So is it just going to be like a retelling of Lord of the Rings?
That's all we procedural? Know so far. It's more or less about getting the rights to do it. It's very early talks, and there's no real commitment at this point. But it's really just a concept more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that it's even something they'd be interested. I mean, I could see if they wanted to get like another Tolkien property, like the Silmarillion or something like that, and try to adapt that. But just because Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings is pretty good, and it's not like it's like poor CGI or something, to where like the technology has improved to where you can make a better looking film. I mean, the film looks pretty gorgeous, and they're coming off the kind of negative reception of The Hobbit, you know, so.
Yeah, you talk about the negativity of taking source material and stretching it out far beyond its what it should be. You know, that's to me, that's what it seems like a series would do, unless you were going way off script and you're going into a bunch of characters' backstories and you're just feeding a lot of stuff in there that wasn't in the books.
Unless it was like a limited television series, something like maybe one season telling the whole show. You know, like Justin was saying, the movies are 12 hours. I mean, you could do, you know, a 10 episode run and they have it to be like one season, and then, you know, next season maybe focus on something other than Lord of the Rings.
I could see a season for each book, maybe. Like a 10 episode season or 8 episode season or something like that.
With Tom Bombadil.
Yeah.
That fucking guy. You know he's going to be in it. There's a lot of Lord of the Rings fans out there that are upset that he's not in the movies.
Yeah, they kind of combine some of his stuff with Treebeard.
Yeah.
In the extendeds.
Who is better than Mr. Bombadil? And you know they'll bring the singing back. Oh, the singing.
Not into it. I like the skipping. Singing in The Hobbit.
I like the one song in Hobbit.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. When I was in the trailer, I was like, oh, I guess singing does work. But when I was reading the book, I was like, skipping.
Yeah, anytime they had like the index, or not the index, the indented font that denoted like a song, I would just skip it.
Yeah, you're like,
oh. In both The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
I'm done.
Done, son. Can't be done. You're telling me they're going to redo Red Sonja.
Oh, yeah. And it's not going to have Stallone's wife.
Bridget Nielsen?
Bridget Nielsen, the bad guy from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
And Drago's wife.
And, yeah. That movie wasn't good, 1985's Red Sonja. But it is worth noting that the lady that was the bad guy that wanted the super mega ball thing that you got to touch, she was from Conan the Barbarian.
Ooh.
She was his girlfriend, if that's what we want to call her.
Anyway. But Arnold isn't playing Conan in Red Sonja, right?
No, he's like playing some guy named like Calidor or something like that.
Okay, just making sure.
Might as well be, because they tease it in a way. At the end of Conan the Destroyer, when he's on the throne all alone with, you know, the king to a lonely kingdom, he's wearing red digs. And in Red Sonja, he's wearing red clothes. So it is, you could argue that it's him, but he's going by a different name.
Because it is in the same universe, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of like a Hercules and Xena kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where they
I wonder why he just wasn't Conan.
It might have been a rights issue.
Maybe.
But who knows? But as far as the new Red Sonja movie is concerned, it is going to be done by the same producers that brought us The Expendables. So very action-oriented types of people. Could be exciting. There are a lot of strong women out there that could take on this role. And I'm excited to see who they pick.
Other than Gwendolyn Christie?
Oh, she's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
She's a tough bird.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could definitely see them putting her in that, and that being a pretty successful run.
Mm-hmm.
She's a big lady.
Yeah,
I have no doubt she could kick my ass.
Yeah, she's tough, man.
Huh. And Tormund loves her.
Yes, that is true.
Big, beautiful baby.
I fucking love Conan, man. The music in the Conan movies. Do you remember who does the score, Randy, for Conan?
I don't, but I know I have both of them on freaking cassette.
Is it Alan Silvestri? Is that the one?
No, I don't think so. Oh gosh, I'm gonna have to look it up. But funny story about that though. So I went in an entire summer. It was like 96 or 95. There was an entire summer where my radio stopped working in my old 83 Honda Accord, and I couldn't eject tapes, and the only music that would play was the Conan the Destroyer soundtrack.
That's right.
Basil Poledouris.
And it's got like this whole bit. I think it may have been The Barbarian. I don't remember. Whichever soundtrack has like this whole narration talking about Conan. Oh, God. I don't remember which
with
one
Mako,
it was.
Mako's talking?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It was a great soundtrack. But when you're an 18-year-old dude trying to like park with chicks and they go to like turn on the radio, you know, crank up that dial and they hear fucking Conan, it's a kind of a mood killer.
He also did Starship Troopers.
Yeah, buddy.
And Red Dawn, Iron Eagle, RoboCop.
Oh, shit.
You know, RoboCop and Conan kind of have sort of the same vibe. Because like, there's like this build-up that happens, and then it goes like, dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, and fucking Conan, or not, RoboCop has that same music where it's like bum 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 bum, like echo when he's driving on the road and it's all exciting. It's literally almost the exact same.
Quigley Down Under, which we talked about last week.
Sure.
Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, Hot Shots Part 2.
Oh man,
Free Willy.
Harley
RoboCop
Davidson
3.
And the Marlboro Man. I fucking love that movie. I forgot all about it.
Under Siege 2.
Dark Territory.
Yeah, Celtic Pride, that old chestnut.
Iron Eagle. Oh my God.
The Starship Troopers. Mickey Blue Eyes. For Love of the Game. I love that.
He is no longer alive. He died at age 61. He died. Tomorrow is his death day. How sad. November 8th. Speaking of which, November 7th is the 20th anniversary of Starship Troopers.
Oh, shit.
Of which he did the score for.
Yes. Comes around full circle.
I feel like I need to watch that movie now.
Oh, it's so good. Oh my God. Starship Troopers.
It's a pretty good movie.
It doesn't suck.
No. But
it won the Academy Award for greatest movie of all time.
Ever.
Ever.
I thought that
best
was
movie
the,
ever.
I thought that was The Highlander.
Nope. That's
I saw that movie The Highlander and it sucked.
It's all lies.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got. You got anything else, Justin? Any shout-outs or anything
yes.
special?
Yes. Thank you for reminding me. So two people that are now listeners to the Geek Legacy podcast.
Ooh.
We got Zach, who not only listens to the podcast, but he is one of the other human beings on this planet that has seen Santa Claus the movie.
He's good people, then.
Yes. that is fantastic. And the other shout-out...
Did that come up in a recent conversation?
It did. It was, your podcast is funny, and I, too, have seen Santa Claus the movie with Dudley Moore. Fantastic. So thank you very much, Zach. You are the man. And also, side note, his buddy, Monaco, who is now my hero... And he caught some bad guys at my store, and one of them was a super bad guy that has been on my shit list for so long, and now he is in jail, and I am excited. So, Monaco, you are my hero. I will play the Superman theme in your honor.
Well, let's all get our kazoos out real quick.
There you go. I had an orange one, but I don't know what happened to it.
Well, awesome. I didn't know our listeners were also heroes.
Yes.
Not all heroes wear capes, Dave.
Well, he should get a cape.
Yeah, he would look good. Unless it gets caught in the vestibule. That would suck.
The vestibule. Well, awesome. Well, thank you, Zach and Monaco, for listening and watching obscure movies like Santa Claus the movie with Mr. Dudley Moore Is that how we got on him last week? Something with Dudley. Oh, it was when we were talking about the highest grossing actors. That's what it was. Dudley Moore was number 5.
He's on the list at like 17 cents or something ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I guess he was in 2 Arthur movies and 10 in Bedazzled and, of course, Santa Claus. The movie. Well, awesome. What about you, Randy? Anything? Any parting words?
I got nothing.
He has got nothing. I got nothing. So thank you guys for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. And make sure to go to geeklegacy.com for all of your geek news and reviews. And whilst there, you can listen to our other podcast, the Pixelated Podcast, where this guy, Justin, talks with his other buddy, Steven, and they talk video games. And they make funny titles for their podcast that sometimes don't make any sense. And you can ask Steven what the hell they mean. I don't know what they mean. But then follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all those places at Geek Legacy, and we will talk to you a different time.